I really want to thank you for that. That was terrific. I sound a little bit more like a frog today than I would hope. So this isn't the voice that you have to hear forever in the future, I hope. But, you know, as I think about things, I think that often in my life, I recognize the ways in which so many of us spend so much time taking care of others, advocating for what is right, working tirelessly to make a difference, or simply struggling to get by, that we can overlook a fundamental and essential truth. Each of us is beloved. Each of us is precious. We need gentleness and care. And yet, I have to admit that, you know, this was not exactly the opening line I was ever picturing for my first sermon at Broad Street Ministry. You know, we are the beloved of God. It's true, but it also seems kind of warm and fuzzy, doesn't it? I've been here since late October and have admired the organization from afar for years. But in my mind's eye, I have to admit, I imagine coming to Broad Street and offering a first sermon that sets us all on fire and charged us up to go fight systems and do justice. I didn't expect to be what some people might call warm and squishy. Well, maybe that fire-up sermon will come on another day, but today it seems really important to go back to the essence of things. And I would argue that it's not at all warm or fuzzy or squishy. It is hard. And it's something many of us struggle with for much of our lives. You see, yes, doing God's work means sharing what we have with others. It means being fair. It means standing up for what is right. I imagine most of us know that. We know the things that John the Baptizer urged people to do. But doing God's work means something else, too. Central to this work is recognizing our core identity before God. We are God's own. We are the beloved of God. God loves us as we are and is pleased with us for who we are right now, today. And when we lose sight of this, we slip into dangerous territory. And for most people, more often than not, it's fairly easy to slide into this space. In his book, The Life of the Beloved, spiritual writer Henry Nouwen reminds us that the real trap is self-rejection. As soon as someone accuses me or criticizes me, as soon as I am rejected, left alone, or abandoned, I find myself thinking, well, that proves once again that I'm a nobody. My dark side says, I am no good. I deserve to be pushed aside, forgotten, rejected, and abandoned. My hope is that these voices of judgment and self-deprecation are not quite as familiar to you as they are to many, but I fear that all of us have heard these voices and taken them in far more than any of us would probably ever care to admit. And what happens when these overly critical voices take root? They push aside the truths of God's love for us. They displace the reality that we are precious to God, that God loves us no matter what. They contradict the sacred voice that calls us beloved. When this happens, we doubt ourselves, we distrust others, we lash out, we turn inward, we get distracted from building up the reign of God because we are so busy tearing ourselves apart. It becomes untenable to try to do the work of justice when we are at war with ourselves. We cannot advocate for others when we diminish the goodness of who we are. It becomes even more difficult to fight for a better place in the world when we actually doubt our own worthiness for justice and fairness in the first place. Henry Nouwen urges us to remember that we are intimately loved long before the parents, teachers, spouses, children, and friends loved or wounded us. That's the truth of our lives. recognizing this is what it means to embrace God's reassurance that we are beloved. And I think, too, that recognizing our own belovedness not only helps us to be gentle with ourselves, to be patient with our shortcomings, to believe in our own potential for growth, but it helps us to do the very same thing with and for others as well. Claiming our belovedness before God necessarily means recognizing the belovedness of others, our neighbors, our friends, strangers, people who are really different from us, people we may even think are our enemies. And when we can do this, it changes everything. After spending part of an evening last week at our overnight cafe, I was reminded of an old story that I've heard many, many different times. It's an ancient tale of, I think it's belovedness and radical hospitality. Maybe you've heard it. If you have, just be patient with me for a second. But it's a story about a monastery that was dying out. There were only 5 monks left, the leader and 4 others. And in that area near the monastery, there was a hermitage, occasionally used by a rabbi from the nearby town. The leader of the monastery, the abbot, went in search of the rabbi to seek advice about his dying community one day. When he reached the hermitage, the abbot shared his pains and fears about the dying order, and all the rabbi could do was commiserate. "I know how it is," he said sadly. They talked more and spoke of deep things, and as the abbot left, he asked the rabbi if he had any advice to help save his dying community. "I'm sorry," the rabbi said. "I have no advice for you. All I can say is that the Messiah is among you." The abbot left and was puzzled by what he heard. When his brothers asked about his time with the rabbi, he shared the mysterious message. The monks didn't know what to make of it, but began to wonder about one another. What if one of the others was indeed the Messiah? Or what if I'm the Messiah? The concept blew their minds. The notion deepened in them, and they began to treat each other, including themselves, with extraordinary love and respect, just in case one of them was indeed the Messiah. As the spirit among them grew, they stopped worrying about their imminent demise. They embraced one another. Their thoughtfulness grew. Joy seemed to descend upon them. And word got out. People went to the monastery to be in the presence of this love and joy and respect. People were drawn to explore it and began to join the community. Within a few years, the monastery was thriving again and became a vibrant center of light and spirituality for the world around them. So sometimes I really love this story. Sometimes this story just gets on my nerves for a lot of different reasons. But what I find in it so often is this call to recognize the divine light in each of us. And usually it calls me to recognize the divine light in other people. It's served as an invitation to love others in deep and unexpected ways. And when I think about life here at Broad Street, it seems to embody our own call to radical hospitality. But what happens when we move our focus on the other and take a moment to notice the divine light in ourselves? What happens when our quest for justice and peace can actually apply to our lives too? The story of the rabbi's gift isn't just a foil to get us all to love one another on the off-off chance that God is hiding out and masquerading as a stranger in our midst. It's an invitation to recognize that God is indeed within each of us and within the hearts of all of those around us. It's a reminder to claim the root of the core identity that we hold before God. We are beloved. We belong to God. God is well pleased. So can we take these truths and treat ourselves with kindness, with care? Can we be gentle with ourselves? Can we ask for help when we need it? Can we let ourselves rest or attend to the healing that we need? When we do this, we recognize our belovedness. And yeah, we strengthen ourselves for the long haul that helps us to see the belovedness of everyone else around us. And all of this opens the door to radical hospitality. Love for ourselves, love for one another, love that really can change the world. So this week, do what you do in the world. But try to do it with gentleness. Be kind to yourselves and embrace the goodness of you. I promise we'll talk justice and systems another time. But this week, take care of you. And thanks for your warm welcome to Broad Street.